It is Memorial Day, and it's a day full of stories. And we begin where we begin each week in the story that is our story, which is God's story, our biblical story. And today I give you three snapshots from that first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. And that book is full of families that simply didn't get along all the time. Brothers who often were at war with each other, but there's a moment in each of those brothers' stories that's a lot like our Memorial Day. Hear this first one. Although Abraham had lived 175 years, and then Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man full of years, and he was gathered to his people, his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre, in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar, the Hittite. Scene 2. Jacob had come home to his father Isaac in Mamre near Kithra Arab, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had stayed. Isaac lived 180 years. Then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, old and full of years, and his sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. And finally, from that last chapter of the book of Genesis, the great story of Joseph and his brothers. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" So they sent word to Joseph saying, "Your father left these instructions before he died." One more, Steve. There we go. "This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. So please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father." When their message came to him, Joseph wept. Today is a day full of stories. Our stories, God's stories, united together in one. Today I just lift up one of our stories from one of our own, a Memorial Day story, a soldier's story.
Draft lottery way back in the day. It's the only lottery I've ever won, but I had a number 3, so I brought a lot of joy to my college friends who had much higher numbers than me, but so I knew where I was destined to go and decided I'd beat the system, so I joined. So then when I got out of the Army, didn't have quite enough money to make it through the month, so I signed up for the reserves. Figured, you know, how hard can one weekend a month and 2 weeks during the summer be? And found out for an officer it was more like 3 weekends a month and 2.5 or 3 weeks during the summer, so those kind of things. And then, you know, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. We got called up and, you know, ended up spending 6 months in Saudi Arabia, so in support of Operation Desert Storm and Desert Shield. And well, actually, the hardest moment was leaving. We left in an ice storm, and, you know, I saw the wife walking away from me. I, of course, was trying to get 15 different things done at once, and, you know, I knew the instant she turned her back and started walking away that I had to, you know, change that. And so I kind of slid over to her on the ice and grabbed her and, you know, hugged her, told her not to worry that, you know, I'd be. Even the lack of a mirror. I mean, I was shaving every day in a little piece of probably 4x6 glass, if not smaller, and went into town one time, and I was walking into a hotel, and I was looking in front of me, and I saw these two old guys that were really beat down. coming towards myself and this other fellow, and took three or four more steps, and I was thinking, like, boy, what am I going to say to these guys, because they just look terrible. And then I realized I was looking at a full-length mirror at the end of the hall, and I was actually seeing myself. And so it was, you know, just didn't even recognize myself. So it's a lot of, yeah, that's a lot of stress. It's a lot of stuff to keep in mind. Well, you need to have a good relationship with God. You know, I pretty much had a constant dialogue, and you know, how are we going to do this, and how am I going to make it through the day, and boy, I hope you keep my feet on the right path, because I sure don't want to make it wrong. What's called stone mosques for our prisoners who were of the Muslim faith. And when the Saudis toured our camp to see how we ran prisoner of war camps, they were so impressed by the fact that we had set up stone mosques so that their Muslim brothers could practice their faith, that they actually allowed us on Easter Sunday to have an outside sunrise service. Mm. So it was really probably the first official recognition of the Christian faith by a entity of the Saudi government since they converted to being Muslim. So it was great.
What was this?
It was green. I mean, come back in June, everything's green, the flowers are blooming and all that kind of stuff. It was just wonderful. But, you know, it was tough, you know, when you're used to being 18, 20 hours a day and all that adrenaline pumping through your system. You know, it takes some adjustment. I couldn't sleep with the lights out. Had to leave lights on because I didn't want to wake up in the middle of the night and not know where I was. And you know, obviously there's a big sacrifice made by members of the military. Some people made the ultimate sacrifice. They gave up their life. And it's for, you know, for our freedom, for our ability. And, you know, yeah, we need to honor those people that have done that and respect them, because if it wasn't for them, you know, it'd be a whole different world today. So, and I just think, you know, that we can't thank them enough for that sacrifice. So, hug a veteran, you know, if you got him.
Warren Fry will be in the narthex after the service to collect his hugs. So be there. Jerry's rolling her eyes. You know what they say, Jerry? Behind every good man is a woman rolling her eyes. So, and mine just did too. So, walls. You know, they often build walls to divide us, build them to separate us. Walls can fence us in and lock them out, but there is one wall that seems a bit different than most other walls. It does not seem to separate. It doesn't seem to keep people divided. In fact, this wall actually seems to bring folks together. It's a wall that seeks to unite rather than divide. It's a wall that seeks to open us up rather than to seal things away. I'll never forget my first visit to that wall. It was the summer of 1989, and I was 17 years old and about to enter my senior year of high school. I was visiting Washington, D.C., along with 49 other soon-to-be high school seniors as a part of the Boys Nation, a leadership program sponsored by the American Legion. As a part of that trip, we were given a tour of the mall of our nation's capital. It was quite an experience for a young kid from a small town in northern Wisconsin, for except from a family trip to South Dakota in junior high, had never left the borders of Packer Country. And suddenly, there I was, standing in front of all of the famous sites of our nation's capital, all of the places I had seen in the books and on television, and there they were, and they seemed larger and more mythic once I was actually standing in front of them. We went from monument to monument, from museum to museum, but without a doubt, the most powerful and the most unforgettable moment of that day was a visit to a wall, now known as the Wall. The Vietnam Memorial. I'll never forget it. I started out at the side where the wall is built into the earth, below ground level. The area within the wall angles up and is contoured from a gentle sloping approach towards the center of the wall. When you begin to walk the wall, there is a stirring among those who are visiting. There's chatter and conversation. But with every step, as the descent to the center reveals more and more of the wall, it gets quieter and quieter and quieter. Although I'm sure there was much noise and commotion on the streets and on the grounds around the memorial, on that moment a peculiar kind of quiet seemed to prevail. It was a reverential quiet. Even people like me who tend to be chatterboxes, people who prattle on endlessly about virtually nothing. Even people like that, people like me, grew quiet as they walk along this wall. Each step along that wall revealed amazing moments, touching moments, moments filled with tragedy and with grace. I pass a man in his fatigues. He's looking for a name on that wall. There's a family there with their minister, and they seem to be having a prayer service. There are flowers and handwritten notes and a teddy bear, one next to a senior picture of a young man who seemed just 20 years younger. People etched names on the wall of loved ones and persons from their hometown. Each step brought a new awareness that every name on that wall was somebody's father, was somebody's brother, somebody's son, somebody's friend. These were the names of real people who lived real lives and who had real dreams. It was an amazing few moments for a 17-year-old while I traveled near the center of that wall. There, within the protection of the arms of the memorial and surrounded by the grassy slope, I came to a place I had never experienced before. A place of quiet, a place of calmness, a place of almost unspeakable serenity. In that moment, surrounded by the names of 58,228 American men and women who lost their lives in that struggle, I found myself standing on the most holy of ground. And in that moment, I became clear as a 17-year-old can be. In that moment, I knew what was most important in life. I stood there awestruck by its sacredness, by the centrality of family, the importance of real friends, and the love and mercy of a God that offers life even in the face of death. I stood in that moment with people from all walks of life, people from all different races and nationalities, and we stood in the center of that wall in total silence. And even though no one standing there spoke a word, we were connected, drawn together in that moment, connected in something bigger than just ourselves. Something happened to me that day. Something changed within me. I left there that day committed to work hard for peace. A life that might in some way contribute to the day when no more walls of this sort would ever have to be built. But I also left there that day with a profound appreciation for the sacrifice of these men and women and a new sensitivity to the families whose lives have been touched. A prophetic commitment to work for peace, and a pastoral concern to ease the pain of those left behind. That is what I left that wall with on that day. If we're honest, we live in a world where there's too many walls. Walls that separate and divide. But on that day, that wall brought people together. It was a wall that no longer divided. What is it about that wall, the Vietnam Memorial Wall, that has such a powerful impact on the people that visit it? What can we learn from it today on Memorial Day, in a time of war and conflict, at a time when our nation seems divided more than it ever has? What can this wall help us do to find new ground that is common and new places of understanding? Those three little readings from our scripture today have something to tell us about the very act of memorializing, the remembering of those who have gone before us. There's a message to us, the living. It's an invitation to healing. Our readings this morning come from the book of Genesis. Each reading tells a story about brothers. Ishmael and Isaac, Esau and Jacob, Joseph and his 11 brothers, they are like so many other brothers. They seldom got along. I know that now, as being the father of brothers who seldom get along. We had one heck of a week at the Nelson house. Bridget said if there was a help wanted sign anywhere, she would have taken it. If there were tickets to anywhere in the world, she would have taken it. For these brothers were like these biblical brothers, Ishmael and Isaac, Esau and Jacob, Joseph and his 11 brothers. They took sibling rivalry to whole new levels. They schemed against each other, set each other up for failure, and they said some not so brotherly things about each other. One brother watched in silence while the other brother was sent to die in the desert. Another tricked their father into giving him the entirety of the inheritance. And good old Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. These sibling rivalries were so deep and so full of hatred that they threatened to break apart the very covenant God had hoped to establish with his people. When the brothers of the covenant don't get along, is there any hope for the covenant at all? But each time that this family seemed to be at the end of the rope, each time it seemed that the situation was utterly hopeless, the story suddenly changes. And when does it change? It changes for each of these warring brothers on Memorial Day. Did you catch that remarkable moment in each one of those pieces of scripture? When Abraham dies, Ishmael and Isaac bury him together. When Isaac dies, Esau and Jacob come together to bury their father. And when Jacob dies, there's that moving scene of reconciliation among these sons. They are there all together. I can tell you now, after almost a decade of doing funerals for families, there is a moment of grace that brothers and sisters who haven't been able to get along over anything have an opportunity to begin again at the moment of memorial. In the Bible, it happened to those three sets of brothers. Despite the tears, despite all the words of the past that wounded, despite all of the brokenness and hatred and misunderstanding, it was in the moment of death, the moment of memorial, the moment of remembrance that brought these families together in ways that just moments before were absolutely impossible. In that moment, they forgive each other. In that moment, they forgive themselves. There's no way around it. Our Bible tells a story of a troubled family, a deeply divided family. However, there is another story. It's the story of a God who, despite the struggles of this family, never, ever abandons them. For each member of this family, it is in the cemetery, around the grave, at Memorial Day, that they get connected to something larger than themselves. Something that will bring healing to their souls and connection to their separateness. There's no way about it, friends. Our story, the human story, is a story of a troubled family. We are too often deeply divided. So we must cling to that other story. The story of a God who, despite our struggles, does never abandon us. A God who is there to help us along the way. A God who, even in the midst of Memorial Day observances, can connect us to something larger than ourselves. Hear the good news. Isaac and Ishmael buried their father. Jacob and Esau buried their father. Joseph and his brothers buried their father. They came together when it mattered most. Sometime this weekend, I want each of you to find a place of reverential quiet. I want you to become aware that the sounds of the world are simply disappearing for a moment. The traffic, the construction, the children, the babies, come to a place of silence for a moment where you can remember what those people who have gone ahead of us are saying to us. It's an amazing thing when you look at the Vietnam Wall. People leave the most amazing things along it. One of the things that was left at the wall was a picture. It was a picture of a young Vietnamese soldier in his mid-20s standing there with a young girl no more the age of 7 or 8. And there was a note attached to it, and here's what it said. Dear sir, for 22 years I have carried your picture in my wallet. I was only 18 years old that day when we faced one another on that trail in Chu Lao. Why you didn't take my life, I'll never know. You stared at me for so long, armed with your AK-47, and yet you did not fire. Forgive me. I was reacting as I was trained. So many times over the years, I have stared at your picture and that of your daughter, I suspect. I perceive you now as a brave soldier. Above all else, I can now respect you for the importance that your life held. And I guess that's why I'm here today. It's time for me to continue the process and release my pain and guilt. Sir, forgive me. That note, from one man to another, from one brother to another, seems to sum up all the power of that wall in Vietnam, all the potential of Memorial Day, and all the truth of the scripture we have considered here this morning. This note reminds us that our mourning and remembrance of all those who have died, whether on the battlefield or in the context of their everyday lives, can lead us to the common ground of forgiveness and reconciliation and new beginning. Friends, that is simply my prayer for us on Memorial Day. is that we find that moment when the voices of those who have gone before us whisper back to us, life is precious. Life is about love. Forgive each other. God is with you. Before we close today, I need you to do something for me. I need you to find a piece of paper, pull it out of your purse, or take out your worship bulletin. Find something to write with. You know it's going to be good when I do these things. And I want you to write this in the margin. I want you to write this. I thank my God for the remembrance of you. I thank my God for the remembrance of you. I thank my God for the remembrance of you. And then write a name. You choose the name. You remember the name of someone, the name of anyone, friend or family, someone who has gone ahead of you. And when you write that name, write another, and then another, and then another, and then another. And here's the deal about that list. You're going to want to keep that list. You're going to want to keep it in a safe place because to you it's not a list. You are making your own memorial wall. But you see, you don't want to just keep that list tomorrow. In fact, the next time you move, you're going to want to keep that list. There might come a time in your life when you have to leave behind your car and your library and your furniture and your computer and everything else, but you're going to want to keep that list with you. In fact, when your journey is ended and you're preparing to take leave of this earth, you're going to want to take that list with you. I know when you get to the gate, St. Peter's going to say, hey, look, you came into this world with nothing. You've got to come out of it with nothing. What is that in your hand? And you're just going to hold it up and say, it's just a few names. St. Peter's going to take that list from you and he's going to say, well, let me see that list of names. St. Peter's going to read that list of names, and then a big smile is going to come on his face. He says, oh, those people. You see, I know those people. In fact, I passed him on the way here today. They were just down the road, and they were painting a great big sign. And it says, welcome home.